Welcome to another episode of the Winter is Coming Fantasy Hockey Podcast, a podcast about a league you're not in and with people you don't know. This week, the people you do know, Alex and my co-host.
I'm Dylan.
Who did we have on this week, Dylan?
This week we have Derek from the Cheaters Never Win podcast. They're a Carolina Hurricanes podcast. And we invited him on the show to talk everything we don't know, I guess, about the Carolina Hurricanes.
I learned a lot. I mean, one thing I really enjoyed was kind of the nuances of Taro Teravainen's nicknames.
Did you just mispronounce his name again?
I said Taro Teravainen.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Derek tries his best to teach me how to say Andre Shnetiknov.
Shnetiknov
in his name. We talk all things Scott Darling, which is fun. And we also talk about BC beer right off the top.
Yeah, apparently he was delivered a beer that is close to my heart.
Well, ignore our ramblings about the podcast. Here it is in all its glory. It's Derek Ressler from the Cheaters Never Win podcast. All right, welcome to another installment of the NHL Fandom Series. And Dylan, who do we have on this week?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
You invited him.
Yes, I did. That one's on you. So joining us today from the faraway land of Carolina, I believe. I actually didn't confirm where you are, Derek. But is Derek of the Cheaters Never Win Carolina podcast / beer reviews? I'm just reading your website head title here.
Yeah.
Beer reviews.
That's right. We do review beer. We are in Carolina. And I've actually had someone who listens to our podcast who lives in Seattle who can access delicious BC beer ship us a nice bottle of Fat Tug IPA that we reviewed on our podcast.
Are you kidding? Fat Tug, I'm going to tell you right now, between some of my friends, Fat Tug is known as the beer that you don't wake up from, just because, I mean, if you had one bottle, I guess that's okay. You were fine after, but we'll usually go out and have four or five or six Fat Tugs, and the next morning it's all pain from top to bottom. What did you think?
Yeah, I only had one bottle, but it was absolutely delicious. I don't know what the ABV on it is. I think it was around like 7 or something, but yeah, I could see how 4 or 5 or so would put you in a world of hurt the next morning.
Yeah, they're definitely a sorry, we're just doing a beer podcast now because you mentioned a beer from here. They're definitely one of the stronger cided beers from Vancouver. They're actually from Victoria, which is on a small little island outside of Vancouver.
The one BC liquor fun fact I can provide is during the summer, there's this huge debate between at kind of a federal level is we have a bunch of oil up north, and there's like this big pipeline they wanted to build down to like a refinery, and our province doesn't want it because we like our wilderness and the environment, but our neighboring province, Alberta, doesn't. And
they like oil.
Yeah. So as part of like a negotiation tactic, they banned the import of all BC liquor from BC to Alberta, specifically thinking that would like help the negotiation somehow.
as if I needed another reason to hate that province beyond the fact that they employ Bill Peters and are responsible for Cam Ward being on this earth. You've now given me a hat trick of reasons that I should not enjoy Alberta.
Speaking of Cam Ward, I mean, let's kind of segue into some hockey talk as we should have probably on a fantasy hockey podcast. But so you're a fan of kind of a really storied team, kind of a team that's gone through a bunch of history. You guys started off in Hartford as the Whalers and transferred over to Carolina. And then you won a cup, which Dylan and I have no idea even looks like, I feel, as Vancouver fans. When did you start following the Carolina Hurricanes? What made you be a fan? What made you continue being a fan? Why should anyone be a fan of the Carolina Hurricanes, I guess, is just my question.
Sell the Hurricanes to us.
Your last question is a great question. And first, I'd like to thank you for probably being the first person to unironically refer to this franchise as a storied one. So thank you for that one. I started becoming a Hurricanes fan what I was in high school. So growing up as a kid, and this may shock a lot of people, I lived in North Carolina since I was 3 years old, but I always enjoyed hockey video games. You know, started with NES ice hockey, and you pick your combination of skinny, medium, and fat guys. Yes. Loved those.
And you know, short, medium, tall.
'93, '94. I know which one actually had blood and which one was mentioned in Clerks, all that good stuff. But I didn't go to a game until I was like my junior year in high school, which I believe you would call grade 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with a buddy, and even though I'd played the video games and I kind of knew a little bit of the rules, I probably irritated him all game long of like, what is that? You're allowed to do that? Wait, you can't do that? But I gained such an appreciation for the speed of the game because we sat down like third or fourth row from the ice. Thanks, Carolina ticket races. And I fell in love with the game. And then as a senior in high school, I said, screw it. I'm doing whatever I can to scrape together some money from whatever side jobs I have to get a quarter season ticket. And I did that. And that was in the 2000-2001 season. And I have had at least a quarter season to the Hurricanes ever since.
That's awesome. So you were around for the whole 2005 or 2006 cup run?
I was there for the cup run. I was there when we somehow ran into the Detroit Red Wings all-time Hall of Fame team in 2002. So, yeah, I've seen all of that. And I've seen a time when Paul Maurice coached this team to 7 consecutive ties at home.
You know, that's incredible. What? I mean, that was like the pinnacle of trap hockey.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think the list of things that I could make that I would rather see than Paul Maurice be within 500 feet of my hockey team would take me a really, really long time.
So I guess segueing to current Carolina Hurricanes, how do you feel about the management now? You have Rod Brind'Amour behind the bench.
Yep. So at first, I was indifferent to Brind'Amour being hired. I thought it a little bit was a hire out of convenience. You know, Rod obviously is a to use your word, a storied name among these franchises.
doesn't he have like a nickname?
Rafters. Say what?
Doesn't he have a nickname? There's like,
oh, Rod of Rod the Bod.
Rod the Bod. Okay, I think it's Rod the Bod.
Oh, God. So, I mean, as Brind'Amour is from BC, please tell me you guys have seen the picture of Rod hoisting the cup atop a stream where he is shirtless and just Brock Lesnar looks at that physique. And
it does ring a few bells. I think his family actually grew up on the street of like my mom's cousin's house. Also, he lived on the island. He's from Campbell River, which is like northern Vancouver Island. And their family was just down the street from us. And if memory serves me right, they always had like a red Camaro parked in front, which I think is like right on brand, is it not?
I mean, look, if you think early 90s hockey hair, which is when he really came into the league, you think mullets. And when you think mullets, you got to go with a Camaro, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So at first, I wasn't in love with it. I didn't hate it. I was honestly happy with anybody not named Bill Peters or Paul Maurice coaching this team. Well, or Kirk Muller, or Pierre Maguire. Okay, so most of the coaches who've ever coached this franchise, I didn't want back. Peter Laviolette, I've been cool with, but that was about it. But ever since then, I mean, he's a guy that you're never going to outwork. And I think as a coach, that can help bleed into the team. He loves the area. He loves the franchise. And I think he's doing a decent job. But the problem is, so far, it's like the results have been so damn similar. Like, congratulations, we're out shooting every opponent by 10 to 15 shots a game, but we're losing more games than we win.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not the answer to hockey.
Well, the Hurricanes have like perennially been the analytical darlings, right? The team that's doing all the right things, and like they're the ones that are pushing play and all those like those buzzwords that you hear, but they've never had, well, at least not in the last few years, they haven't had the results to match it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I enjoy hopping onto Twitter every day and being both pleased and wanting to just go ahead and just close that laptop screen real tight and just walk the hell away whenever I see Sean Tierney and anybody else tweeting out those pictures of, hey, look, here are the Hurricanes in the top right quadrant where you want to be of shot differential. And then I look at the standings and go, huh, this doesn't add up. Is Corsi a myth?
Well, they're in the top right quadrant of every analytical like chart that I've ever looked at, which I think just means that they're cheating. Like they're doing something incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, could have fooled me.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about Rob Brind'Amour was kind of reading about his offseason and how he got into being a coach. And one of the things that I found on by Sarah Sevian of The Athletic was she was talking about how he practices just as hard as the players. So I'm kind of curious, how many season-ending injuries on the Carolina Hurricanes would it be before Rob Brind'Amour actually just suits up?
I think it would be a lot.
Okay.
Because he's been very honest that while he says he wants to get back out there when he's behind the bench and, you know, things are going sideways, he knows he can't.
Right.
However, this is a man who I've heard stories about when he would go on vacation with other players, would put his stationary bike in the back of his pickup truck to go up to the lake house.
Oh my God.
And then
he would just bench press all the other players, right?
I mean, I don't think it would take too much to bench press Aho.
That's true.
And then I guess it's no surprise then when Dylan and I were doing our preseason preview, we're of course piping up Aho and your rookie Shnetnikov, a name I'll never be able to pronounce. But but I saw that your team names were Grit and Grind.
The preseason teams.
You had to bring that up.
Is that a sore spot amongst Canes fans?
That's the most quintessential just hockey man naming things. I mean, that is the, like, you know what, screw it, we're hiring Ken Hitchcock after we fired our coach of teams.
Well, I mean, that just happened today, did it not?
Oh, that's why I brought it up. I hated the Team Grit and Team Grind. I thought it was... It was stupid. It was lazy. It was just like old school hockey man wants to prove he's old school. I thought it was really hokey and didn't love it. But thankfully, we've moved on.
Did he not name them after his left and right biceps, though? I thought that's what the team names were actually named after, was Grit and Grind, his biceps.
I had not heard that, but maybe that is due in part to the fact of the dearth of local media we've had here.
Of course, Rob Brind'Amour's hiring was kind of a really big offseason for you guys. You traded Hanifin and Lindholm. Usually I'm not a fan of trading away like a really young, good defenseman like Hanifin, but you guys landed Dougie Hamilton, who seemed to hate Calgary. So it was awesome that you went to a team that proceeded to put him on Team Grind, I assume. And and then Michael Ferland. You guys, of course, traded longtime franchise cornerstone Jeff Skinner. So when you kind of see all these trades happen, Dylan and I are fans of the Canucks, who have traditionally kind of been very, very conservative with their offseason moves. The last time we made a major one was probably Louis Erickson, which was much maligned here in Vancouver. So what was kind of the fan reaction to all those kind of really big moves?
So we were in the draft. We were not in the draft. We were in Dallas for the draft this year. Day two, we're sitting there in the American Airlines Arena or Center or Pavilion, whatever the hell they call it. And we're looking at the tables and we see Brad Treliving and Don Waddell having a lot of conversation. And we figured they couldn't be talking about turtlenecks for that long. And we're watching them go. And then we see them go to Central Registry. And then we see the Hurricanes PR staff taking pictures of Treliving and Waddell shaking hands. We're going, this seems like it's a bigger move than maybe just shuffling deck chairs around. I don't get it. And then we start to see the word from McKenzie and other respected guys going, hey, there's something big building here. And I tell you all this to let you know that the eight of us representing Section 328 at the draft were seated directly behind Calgary Flames fans. And we're seeing the names in there, and we see Lindholm is involved, and the Flames fans got excited. And then we saw It was Dougie Hamilton involved, and it looked like someone had done something awful to their family pets. They were just despondent, and we're all unable to contain our joy that we had gotten Dougie Hamilton. So, yes, giving up Noah Hanifin, who was a top five pick just 3 years earlier, who when we were at the draft in Sunrise, Florida, when we took Noah Hanifin, we were ecstatic. That was the guy we wanted, and we thought he could, you know, be a top two defenseman at some point. But the more I think about it, Noah Hanifin, I think at his best, could be the player Dougie Hamilton is now. And while Lindholm has gotten off to a really good start in Calgary, and I think he could be a really good player, and I hope all the best for him, Michael Ferland has brought an element to the Hurricanes that we sorely missed of a guy who goes to the net, will lay the body, and has enough skill to play on a top line. Then you throw in Adam Fox, who, if he signs, if he plays, could be a really high-end defensive prospect. So that trade was really good. The other one that you mentioned, Jeff Skinner going to Buffalo, has not so much has been well-received based on the return of, I think it was a second, a third, and Cliff Pooh, who's a mid-level prospect.
Yeah. But I can't believe there was no first pick there. Like, first round pick.
I think what really hurt that was that Skinner had a no-trade clause, and that limited the number of people making offers, because it's like, look, there are probably 20-25 teams that had heard directly or indirectly that Skinner wouldn't go. And what's hurting Canes fans right now is when you look at the NHL goal scoring leaders, Skinner, I don't know if last night changed anything, but when I checked yesterday afternoon, he was tied for second in the league with 14 goals. That bothers Canes fans, because we're a team who's had struggles to score goals. But I think there's a couple factors of, again, one, Skinner waived a no trade clause. So that means to some degree he wanted out. Two, the team obviously wanted him out or they wouldn't have traded him. And three, playing with Jack Eichel will help damn near anyone.
Totally. When Jack Eichel is healthy, which doesn't always happen.
He always gets some random like high ankle sprain or something.
It's not random. It's very expected every season. It's a high ankle sprain. But out for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Out for 8 weeks. Out for 10 weeks. Just so you know, I drafted Jack Eichel last year. So I feel the pain.
Were you a little bit disappointed that goaltending was who was your Scott Darling, obviously is well documented, forgot how to play goalie last year, I guess, to put it lightly. And then you proceeded to sign Mrazek, who occasionally remembered how to play goalie last year. Were you at all like confused as to why Carolina didn't necessarily go out and try to get a bigger name or trade for one?
No, only because I didn't think that the new ownership was willing to buy Scott Darling out at this point.
Right.
And no one was willing to. No one was going to trade for Scott Darling after last year. I mean, the three of us, probably could have put up similar numbers. And I don't know about you guys. I've never stopped a puck in my life. But I think you had to, if only to get a little bit of value back on the deal that was signed, you had to have Darling come in this year as your guy. So with that $4 million committed, it'd be really hard to go and, put another $6-7 million or whatever it would take to get a more proven quantity in net. I mean, I don't know what was really out there, but I didn't see a whole lot happening. And I think the biggest problem with the Hurricanes has been goaltending has been so bad for 6 or 7 years that we don't need to have a Bobrovsky or a Rene Holtby or John Gibson or any of those kind of guys. We just need to be in the middle of the league as opposed to somewhere between 27 and 30 in goaltending, and it would be a huge difference. And I think that's what the front office was hoping for between Mrazek and a hopefully revived Darling. To this point, we haven't really seen it. I don't think any of our three goalies, including Curtis, the vagabond McElhenney, I think they're all still below a 900 on the year, and you can't win a lot of hockey games with that.
You're telling two Canuck fans who have been watching Jacob Markstrom slowly disintegrate over the last 10 games, who last season played his best hockey after a game that Nilsson would play, and they were going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. basically pushing each other to decency in net. Since Nilsson's been injured, Markstrom has, he's been falling into pieces.
As
fantasy
Canucks
advice,
fans
don't draft
and a
Matt Markstrom.
As Canucks fans there and a Canes fan here, if we want to, commiserate over goaltending, we need to talk about how we got Eddie Lack from you guys and then promptly ruined him.
That was another thing. Yeah.
Not only his hockey, you ruined his spirit. You ruined the most important part of Eddie Lack.
We were so excited about Eddie and just such a good personality and seemingly a really great guy. And
have you seen him lately? Where is he? I miss him.
I don't know. Maybe he's walking the earth in search of the best taco truck.
I hope so. Rest in peace, Eddie.
Were you at all excited? Because there was a lot of talk about that new owner, Thomas Dundon, when he came in, because he was kind of supposed to be this new analytical mind that was going to make Carolina hockey great again. And then all of a sudden, there's rumors that he wasn't paying people well enough for them to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, were you guys excited to see him as an owner? And have you guys noticed any kind of changes in terms of the Carolina experience?
Yeah. So in as much as I mentioned earlier that I'd never wanted Paul Maurice or a litany of other names to coach this hockey team again, we were so excited to not have Peter Karmanos as the majority owner of this team. When the guy who owns your team spends the majority of his time in another city,
yeah,
usually not good. And Karmanos is he did not want to take any risks and didn't really care about marketing. And it was so good for this franchise to have a new owner. And Dundon came in and said he's going to do things differently. And some of the criticisms of him not paying people, I've heard and read what I imagine are a lot of the same things that you guys have heard and read. And it seems like he doesn't want to pay a lot for the off-ice product, but seems more willing to pay for the on-ice stuff, if that makes sense. So whereas he may not be willing to pay, $1.5 million for a top flight GM, he would be more willing to shell out what is a good market rate for the upcoming Sebastian Aho contract.
Right.
And I'm okay with that because I think if the product on ice is working, then there's more money to go around and then it can all work itself out. But one good thing is he doesn't care about the typical hockey rules. I've heard that he's had a number of phone calls with Gary Bettman trying to bring a stadium series game to Raleigh, North Carolina, which would be awesome.
That would be amazing. So he's an unconventional owner, which we need more of these unconventional owners in the NHL.
Yeah. Like it's going to be one of those things where either he bends to the will of the other 30 owners and becomes a boring old dude. The league kind of opens up and says, hey, wait a minute, maybe there are other ways to do this. Or he hangs on for a few years till the team starts doing good and then sells it and puts $100 million in his pocket.
Right. So I was kind of looking at your podcast, and I noticed you're a huge wrestling fan. Is that right?
That we are, and we are always mystified at the overlap between hockey fans and wrestling fans.
Okay. This is we're two for two. Like our last guest was also a huge wrestling fan as well. Is there something that we're missing here?
I'm sure he talked Harley Race all night.
What's that?
I'm sure he talked Harley Race and the old NWA all night.
It would have gone right over our heads.
He mentioned our last guest had actually designed a NWA like themed shirt about the St. Louis Blues, which was really
great. Was their team, their podcast shirts.
Which kind of leads me to my next question. Out of the current players on the Hurricanes, and if you also want to do a celebrity pick for a former player, which of them would make the best a professional wrestler?
I mean, if we're going sheer power, Brendan Moore's hard to go against.
Okay.
What's his ring name besides Rob the Bod?
God, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that he's not going to lose every match, but the BC Brawler could be fun.
I like that.
That's really good.
The other idea I have is Jeff O'Neill, because there's a picture of him that we have hosted somewhere on our website on a road trip, and it's him, Ron Francis and Hurricanes and NBC TV play-by-play guy John Forslund. And Jeff O'Neill is in a full-length fur coat.
Oh, boy.
And nothing says professional wrestling ring attire like a full-length fur coat.
And, I mean, his Twitter handle is O-Dog, so he's already got a name.
Yeah. And here's the thing. He'd be a perfect bad guy because he has actually signed one of our friends' jerseys. So they had gathered a lot of other signatures on the team, and they happened to be out, and they saw Jeff O'Neill, and they got a signature for him, from him, and they went back, and they looked at the signature, and it said, "Don't bother me in public, Jeff O'Neill."
That's awesome. That's right on brand for him, too.
Yeah.
Is there any current players you would love to see in the ring?
Michael Ferland would be good.
Michael Ferland, Kevin Bieksa, Sunday. Sunday. Ooh, Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they already had their fights in our last playoff appearance. Weeping tear.
You're using words that I don't understand, like playoff and appearance.
Yeah. When was the last time the Hurricanes made the playoffs? Okay, don't worry about it. that's enough of an answer.
No, it's been a while. I was thinking about making a joke about what U.S. president was in office and then realized I'm talking to people who probably don't know the U.S. presidency as well.
Oh, and that's, you would be surprised at how much Canadians know about American politics.
For whatever reason, Canadians are more interested in American politics than they are in Canadian politics.
This is true. Yeah. It's far more entertaining. Everything just goes right in our country. We're just like, come on, we need some drama.
Well, lucky day. but the last time the Hurricanes made the playoffs was 2009.
Okay, so we do have something on you. We have
yes.
We have a cup appearance since then. An appearance, that's it.
Yeah, we made it to the Eastern Conference Finals that year, where Evgeny Malkin decided to go full playoff Malkin on us.
Man.
And was just unstoppable.
He did that against the Canucks like 2 weeks ago, but it was just sort of like mid-November Malkin, and he still beat everybody on the Canucks.
Yeah, he may be the most hot and cold player that I can think of.
So one of the big things about professional wrestling, of course, is the event entertainment. And I think, Dylan, you've gone to a WrestleMania before.
I haven't been to WrestleMania. I went to Raw once. I was second row, and it was by far one of the best experiences I've ever had. It was so entertaining.
So of like kind of the quintessential pro wrestling things, whether it's like doing the cage in the match or having folding chairs or having heels come out to ridiculously choreographed videos and stuff like that, which elements of those would you bring to the hockey experience?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I like that a lot. So you mentioned that you were at Raw second row one time. Yeah. I was Raw ringside also in 06. And I saw a Ric Flair versus Edge ladder match where I was convinced Ric Flair was going to die in front of me.
Geriatric Ric Flair climbing a ladder.
I don't know how old he was, but I'm pretty sure Ric Flair has been 60 years old for the past 30 years.
It's incredible.
Oh man, what elements would I bring for wrestling? I mean, chairs. Yeah, chair shots are fine to the back, but I don't want chair shots to the head anymore because God knows both of those professions have had more than their fair share of
true
concussions, and I'm sure we'll find out later CTE.
The Hurricanes have
no.
Done...
I know what we need from professional wrestling. We need more old school managers. We need more Paul Heymans. We need more yes. Bobby Heenans. We need more Jimmy Harts. Like, could you imagine if an NHL team had a Jimmy Hart with a megaphone on the bench, like taunting the other team and taunting the other fans?
Well, we have one in the NHL. We have one. We do have Tortorella.
What your star player is going to do?
We have John Tortorella in the NHL.
Well, okay.
And he did storm a dressing room again against the Calgary Flames. Man, the Flames just keep coming up.
Yeah, so give every team a Tortorella and give that person a megaphone.
That would be amazing. That would be incredible. So one of the things that the Hurricanes have done this season, which who knows where they took this cue from. I'm guessing it's either from NHL 93 or whatever it was. Or maybe it was from Monday Night Raw. But the post-game sellies when they won. Where did this come from? Were you there when they did it the first night? Tell me all about it, because it's probably one of the most incredible things that's happened in the NHL in the past decade.
Sadly, I was not there the first night they did it. I only have a season ticket this year, and I was at home watching and going, what the hell am I missing?
Was it expected? Did people know what was going to happen?
No. So I think what it was, because I was watching the broadcast and I heard John Forslund say, when the whole team lined up with the blue line and started doing the skull clap, John Forslund said, enjoy this, folks. No other team in the league does this.
Yeah, I remember listening to that. I remember seeing the
Yeah, and it's
the
like,
clip.
Okay.
So maybe he
and
knew.
I think, the plan was actually just to do the skull clap, but Justin Williams improvised and said, come on, boys, follow me, and let's all just jump into the boards. And you can see watching that one that there's kind of a delayed reaction from everybody of, is he just doing this? We don't want to make him look like an ass. Like, let's...
Yeah, he can't be the only one body checking the fans.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
It's become a thing since then. And then the cool thing was, like, the next time they did the same thing, but since then they've switched it up. Like, they did the jump into the glass on the side instead of the end. They all rode a canoe another game. Last win after Jacob Slavin led everybody, they all just like rode the stick like they were Happy Gilmore.
Which one's your favorite?
Because there's a different, it's almost like the team is nominating a player of the game and that player leads it, and then everybody just follows what that person does. I don't know exactly how it started behind the scenes. I love that it made Brian Burke angry. And I feel like that's the kind of thing that just like, this is, yes, they're professional and all that, but they're playing a game. This is an entertainment thing. I can't think of anything more entertaining than 20 grown men skating down the ice and then ride the stick. Like, that's
incredible.
Just,
it's incredible.
Good fun.
Yeah. That's the only reason that I like, maybe it's not the only reason. I wish the Hurricanes well this season, but I love looking forward to it. Like, if I look for look through the scores at the end of the night and the Hurricanes have won, I'm instantly on YouTube. Like, show me the celebration. Yeah. I need to see what they did this night.
Yeah. And I think, you know, beyond that, I don't think it came from up on high or anything, but it's one of those aspects that it's so good in person. I mean, for all the things that hockey is, you know, it's not the best TV sport. Hockey is a sport better appreciated in person. Yeah. I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. But that's another reason to go to the arena, because it's just so cool to see that in person.
Totally.
As opposed to on a screen in front of you.
Yeah. And I love that it makes guys like you said, Brian Burke mad. Imagine this happening on like a Lou Lamoriello team. Like, they would never happen on a Lou Lamoriello team.
A whole team of guys with facial hair and jersey numbers over 35.
Oh,
jeez. Be so good.
Jeez. Speaking of jerseys, your guys' new third jerseys this season are amazing. Maybe I'm just like crushing on the Hurricanes right now, but the new jerseys are wicked. Do you have one yet?
So I don't. When I first saw the pictures of them, I was like, I don't know, because it's so weird the amount of blank space that's on those jerseys, and the crest that's in the front is so tall. I still think it's kind of weird to have the, you know, A or the C on the top right side as opposed to the top left. But having seen them in person, even as an individual jersey, but then especially seeing the whole team on them on the ice, I like them better. I think I like them. I don't love them, though. And then when I keep hearing things about how Tom Dundon truly hates the swirling toilet bowl logo that currently the Hurricanes use and wants to change that as quickly as possible, I kind of want to save my money until I see what a new Hurricanes jersey is.
An official logo.
And I don't know anything that, like, if there's going to be next year or the year after, but I would imagine as soon as the league will permit it and the graphic design team can come to a quorum, the Hurricanes are going to have a new primary logo before too long.
Interesting. A little insider information there.
There you go.
Maybe you can answer this for me. I was told that between the flags on that third jersey, the two hurricane warning flag, which is what that is, the outline makes the shape of the state. Is that true?
Yep.
Yep. Cool. Okay. There you go.
I think that's a really cool design touch. And I that's one of the more interesting parts of that jersey to me.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think the gray shoulder pads on the ice, they actually, mm-hmm. I mean, they don't look like gray. They look like silver. Or, I don't know. They kind of add something, on when they're set against the ice there.
Yeah, and the color of the numbers on the back of the jerseys, so much better than the old black jerseys that we had, the old thirds. Yeah. I didn't like the way the piping worked on those, and these look so much better.
Yeah.
Right. I would assume only Tom Dunn made that change because the analytics said that you make a better third jersey so that the team would perform better.
or it's crazy because I've heard that they have had that jersey all set to go for a while because Adidas and the league takes almost 18 months to approve a new design.
Oh shit.
That was a huge thing when the previous Nike, I think before Nike was Reebok. Made the for the football jerseys. Oh. They went through like 30 or 40 renditions of the Kelly Green Philadelphia Eagles jerseys before they finally just decided to give up and just make a normal jersey. I've heard crazy jersey stories like that.
In the NBA, they will literally just like, it takes a weekend and they get a new jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why it takes so long, but hooray hockey.
But say you were Tom Dunn or your GM or whoever, what other changes would you make for the team? I mean, there's a lots of talk. I know your last podcast, you went into huge in depth about the Nylander potential Nylander trade. But what changes do you think you would make if you were running the team?
That's one. I'm still kind of on the fence because I could only imagine how much Toronto would want us to give up for a guy like Nylander. The problem with the Canes right now is, I wish our top line was as good as Colorado's top line is, but we are a top line team. If Aho and Teravainen and Ferland aren't working on a given night, I mean, God, the Jordan Staal line is where offense goes to die. The third line of I mix up your third and fourth lines, whoever, isn't going to get anything done. And then the best scoring chances outside of Aho and Teravainen are coming from Andrei Svechnikov, who is a rookie with a lot of potential, but still a rookie, and Jordan Martinook. And that's a problem. Like, we have a lot of third-ish line quality players. We really don't have a second line, and that's a problem. Whereas right now on defense, we're dealing from a position of strength. Like, we have a lot of real quality defenders, Slavin and Hamilton. No doubt about it. They are both top pairing defensemen. Justin Faulk, Calvin DeHaan, Brett Pesce. Those three guys, I think, are all, three, four, five guys very solidly. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, when he is your sixth defenseman, you're doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take some.
Yeah.
In Vancouver, we'll take a defenseman or two.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of, we need secondary scoring so badly. And I know that's a problem that a lot of teams face, but we just need something. Because right now, Jordan Staal is getting way too many minutes, and he does a great job defensively and possession. But dear God, that man does not understand offense.
You had a great tweet the other day. Was name something more less offensive than Jordan Staal in the offensive zone or something along those lines. And I was like, huh. Yeah. did you have any great replies to that one?
I mean, we were thinking of just a jar of marshmallow fluff.
The Ellen DeGeneres show, maybe.
Say what?
The Ellen DeGeneres show.
Oh yeah, that is right up there.
speaking of secondary scoring, the Canes, Rob Brendamore kind of went to the media the other day and said he wants more production out of Svechnikov. I'm never going to be able to say his name right. But he's just been kind of stuck on the third and fourth line, despite being a super high draft pick for you guys. What's the story there?
So I understand that they didn't want to, hey, here's an 18-year-old kid who played against Canadian juniors last year. Now let's throw you in the deep end against the best forwards and defensemen the NHL has to offer. Right. I get not giving him first-line minutes, maybe even second-line minutes based on the way Jordan Staal's line plays and their zone starts and all that minutia. But I think he needs to get more time with more creative players. He and Martinook have played well together because they both play an attacking, driving style. Mm-hmm. One thing that's hurt this team is that Victor Rask apparently sliced his hand open cutting a sweet potato in the offseason.
Oh, God.
And that's why he's been out all year. Like, he severed tendons.
Oh, my goodness.
How do you cut a sweet potato that way? Why do you cut a sweet potato that way?
They're notably soft, too, after, like, you could use a fork.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're cutting them before they're cooked, they are harder than a diamond in an ice storm.
What type of sweet potatoes do you guys have in Carolina?
Well, we actually grow a lot of sweet potatoes here.
Oh, okay. And, so it's not a weird thing to happen.
No, it's not, but, like, be careful with that knife, young man. You've got millions of dollars coming your way.
Yeah.
But Spekhov, I think he needs not so much more even strength time, but more power play time. And I think he's starting to get that. Our power play needs to not suck. But Svechnikov is showing a lot of flashes, and I think he's making fewer mistakes on defense and committing penalties, which I think will only improve the trust that the coaching staff has in him and can maybe keep upping him from the 8, 9, 10 minutes a game to hopefully 12 to 14 minutes a game where he can start to shine. But for an 18-year-old kid, he is very strong physically. He seems like he understands the game. He wants to work really hard off the ice and is a gym rat, which Brindamore is going to love. And I think things are going to work out really well for him. Again, it's still only 20 games into his career.
I was kind of like, you were mentioning that you were around for the 05-06 cup run. And I saw that on that team, a very young Eric Staal had 100 points. And he would have been, he would have been awesome to have in fantasy that year. So speaking of current day Hurricanes, who are we happy with drafting from the Hurricanes? Who are kind of the MVPs of your team?
And before you answer that question, do you play fantasy hockey?
So I have played fantasy hockey for years and years. I played way back when Eric Daze was a good fantasy draft pick. I'd say, I don't know if that even rings a bell for you guys, but...
I'm sorry, who?
Eric Daze, he...
Ottawa? Played in Ottawa, didn't he?
Blackhawks before they started to suck and then came back up. But I would say, I mean, obviously Sebastian Aho.
Yeah.
He's going to be the man on this team. He's working out very well at center. If you're in a league that counts faceoffs, he's actually winning half of them now, which is an improvement from last year.
Okay, good.
Piling up assists, and he's scored more goals early this year than he has in either of his first two seasons. He's really good. Another kind of no-brainer, Dougie Hamilton, who is getting an increasing amount of power play time. I was mystified early in the year why he was barely even getting PP2 minutes and Justin Faulk and Jacob Slavin were eating up most of the power play minutes. Like,
yeah.
Faulk has a good shot. Slavin, eh. Dougie Hamilton has a world-class shot from the point, especially on the power play. Like, unleash that. So those are the two easiest go-tos. Teravainen's pretty good. If you're in a keeper league, which is kind of weird for hockey, Svechnikov, which is how it's pronounced, will work out well for you.
Thank you.
The only thing I would say, if you're drafting any Hurricanes in a fantasy hockey league, whether it's a 1 year or beyond, don't take a goalie. Just don't.
No, we've all learned the hard way.
Pour gasoline on yourself and light a match before you even consider drafting a Hurricanes goalie.
Kind of on the flip side of the coin, who has been so disappointing for your team this year? Whether it's People that you're getting rid of, you want to drop from your fantasy team, or even cut from the Hurricanes if there was no cap ramifications. kind of the fool's gold of the hockey world.
Is this where I talk about Jordan Staal again? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. Sure. He averages 20 minutes for you guys. I can't. You guys hate him that much?
Yeah, I mean, he averages a lot of time. Look, in so many ways, Jordan Staal is like the Toyota Camry of hockey players. He's reliable. He's a good car. It gets you from work to home and home to work and all those things. But nobody goes, oh, man, you got a Camry? I got to come see that thing. That's awesome.
That's true. He also had a streak of like 8 games where he was just a very consistent -1 and no points. So, I mean, like, it didn't have any bearing on the game. It looks like you guys were winning and losing over the past couple of games. But if you're counting plus minus, don't take Jordan Staal.
Is that the Jordan Staal hat trick? A -1, no points, and a one face off or something along those lines?
It's got to be north of 20 minutes.
And 20 minutes.
The Jordan Staal hat trick. How about, speaking of cars, did you see that picture of Scott Darling imitating Baker Mayfield and his Rolls Royce picture? Yeah.
Yeah.
So did he spend all of his money on a Rolls Royce? I was very worried. I was like, you're not a good goalie. Don't do that. You're not going to have any more money.
Hey, look, the way NHL contracts work versus NFL, he's got that 4-year at $4 million per, and worst case scenario, a buyout, he's going to get 2/3 of it. So
yeah, it's a good investment.
He has that NMC too, for some reason.
Yeah.
Why the NMC? Is there any story on that where you're like trying to outbid somebody?
Hold on. No, he doesn't have an NMC on his contract. Does he?
I was just looking at cap space and it looked like he did have one.
I'm sorry if that's true. I'm pulling up Cap Friendly right now.
While Fergie's looking for the movement clause, or the no movement clause,
modified no trade clause. He has a 15-team trade list.
Yeah,
15-team trade list. Yeah, okay, so he'll only go to half of the league, half -1.
Whew, I can sleep better tonight.
What about players who we should be looking out for? Maybe somebody that we can pick up this week or next week, and in a month they're going to be red hot. Is there anybody like that on the Carolina Hurricanes?
No.
When's Victor Rask back?
If you're thinking long term, so a guy who started the year hot as a rookie and cooled off and may get better is Warren Fogle, who we like to call McLovin. He could be good, but later in the year, a guy like Martin Nichas or Valentin Zhukov, who are spending some more time in Charlotte, could come back up and pot some goals. We'll see, because I don't feel like guys like Brock McGinn or Phil DiGiuseppe are ever going to score more than 10 goals in a season.
Right.
And at some point, those guys who don't have a high ceiling are going to get bumped for guys with a much higher ceiling, like a Nichas and like a Zhukov. So keep an eye on those guys, but I wouldn't say like you should drop a bench guy right now and pick one of those guys up, because they're still both in the AHL right now, and that would be foolish. So with very little depth scoring, and it's either coming right now for the Canes of the top line, Hamilton, Falk, Slavin, or basically spin the wheel and pick a player.
What about, so we were talking about Victor Rask earlier. It looks like he was just cleared for practice either today or yesterday. What do you foresee his value looking at coming up?
So apparently he is no longer in contact jersey. He's a guy who is still in, he's now in year 3 of a 6-year, $24 million deal.
Yeah.
And the last 2 years, he hasn't done all that great. I think the last 3 seasons, he's been anywhere between 35 and 48 points or so.
Yeah.
Playing under Bill Peters, never going to help anybody's offensive production. So maybe that could be slightly improved under Brendan Moore. But who knows who he's going to play with? I don't see him slotting into the top line. I know there's an article on NHL.com today about, with Rask coming back, could Aho play wing? And that would be the dumbest thing I think this team would do, is put Rask on the top line and bump Aho to wing when he's top 20 in the league in points as a center.
Don't mess that up. He's got a good thing going on right now.
please don't do that. So I think if Rask is going to slot into center, he's not bumping Jordan Staal from that second line minutes. So he's going to play third line minutes. He's not going to get a whole lot of power play early on. So I would be shocked, you know, in the last, let's say he plays 60 games of the year, if Victor Rask gets north of 30 points.
Are there any like fan favorites of the Carolina Hurricanes that we should know about? I mean,
besides Jordan Staal.
Oh boy. Yeah. Funny enough, I own two Jordan Staal jerseys. I own the Hurricane Jordan Staal one because I was really excited when he came here. And I have a Penguins Winter Classic Jordan Staal jersey because I loved that powder blue.
Oh, the Crosby 2-year injury one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The David Steck Penguins jersey. Yeah. fan favorites. We love Aho, of course. Yeah. Teravainen. And a fun thing that we love with Teuvo Teravainen is you can use any two words that start with T in a row, and that can be a nickname for him. So Torso Tongue Punch, Taco Tuesday, Tarantula Tickler,
Torso
whatever you
tongue
want.
Punch?
All of those work. Torso Tongue Punch. Yeah. they all work as nicknames for him.
That's incredible.
We love him. We love Dougie Hamilton in large part because of all the media banging on him.
I don't understand.
For going to,
why do people hate
going
Dougie
to
Hamilton?
Museums.
Because he likes museums?
Yeah.
I like museums. What's wrong with that?
We have no idea what the hell's wrong with that. Like, that's one of the things we hate. Also about, like, old hockey men. Like, oh, so the team didn't like that he didn't go out to Moxie's with all the boys after the game? He wanted to go look at art and then be awesome to kids in hospitals fighting cancer?
You're not part of this team.
Get rid of that guy.
Get rid of you.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, you and your brother dressed up in costume to put smiles on kids' faces. Gotta go. we are currently loving Dougie Hamilton. Jacob Slavin, just because he seems like just such a quality human being. And I'd say those are probably the big four or five or so. People here loved Jeff Skinner because he came here as an 18-year-old and
he figure skated.
Yes. Yeah,
did you know that?
30 goals and,
did you know that Jeff Skinner was a figure skater? Did you know that?
We did.
it's like the subline every time you see something about Jeff Skinner. Jeff Skinner, former figure skater.
Well, that's all the question that we had for you.
Do you want to know anything about the Canucks? What do the Canucks look like from Carolina?
I mean, so obviously, I still want to know why it's Elias and not Elias Pettersson.
So there was a lot of, I can tell you like the whole backstory to this. There was a lot of questions of how you're going to say Elias, 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 Peterson, Pettersson, PD, whatever. There was a bunch of this. And then for during the preseason and for two games in the season, his parents were here and they were watching the games and they interviewed his dad and his dad said, Elias Pettersson. And so everyone was like, okay, well there, that's how you say his name. You say it like his dad. The problem was the next day they interviewed him and they were like, how do you want your name said? And he was like, I like the Canadian accent. Call me Elias Pettersson. And everyone was like, no, we're not calling you that. We're going to say it like your dad did. I'm actually partial to Elias Pettersson, which is how they said it when he was playing in Sweden. But that's the extent of my Swedish accent.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's been fantastic. You guys have him and Besser with a couple good young players like you guys. I still laugh at the Louis Erickson deal.
As do we.
Now that Eric Staal's not in Raleigh and it's not a thing anymore, I don't think about Vancouver as much because Alex Edler and Staal's not a thing. I really – I don't – I don't mean this as a slight, but because the games are on so damn late, for
that's
me,
true. That is true.
I don't think about Vancouver a whole lot.
It's crazy. There's definitely that, and I mean this in the nicest way, the East Coast bias.
Yeah.
Because you guys just don't see any of the West Coast games. But like, I'll get home in the evening and it's great. I can put on a game at 5 or 4 and then put on another game at 7, watch them back to back and be like, okay, now I get to see what's happening in the East. Generally, I'm watching Toronto games just because they're the ones that are on.
Right. But you get to catch the second and or third period of the, you know, Central or, I mean, not Central, Metro or Atlantic Division games and
absolutely
watch some stuff out West.
Yeah, we definitely are privileged to be able to watch East Coast games. Well, besides Toronto games, nobody wants to watch a Toronto game. The downside, though, is when teams like Toronto and Montreal come to Vancouver, the Canucks just have to play at 4 o'clock, which is
Saturday afternoon. Just
last weekend, the Montreal game, we had to play at 4, and it was like, we left the arena and it was 7:30, and I'm like, what the hell are we supposed to do now?
Go drink 4 or 5 Fat Tug IPA.
Exactly. It's exactly what we did.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Derek. Where can our fans find you?
All 12 of them.
So you can find us on the Twitter machine. We are at section 328. Actually, I'm sorry, section_328. You can find us at section328.com. Our podcast, Cheaters Never Win, is, you can find that wherever podcasts are purveyed, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, so on and so forth. And I think those are really the big ones.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Derek. We wish you the best. And the Canucks play the Carolina next on January 23rd. So we look forward to that. We'll perhaps see Tommy Totuck make a sick play here or there. And I look forward to also being able to one day pronounce Shnevektanov or however you pronounce
it. It's not that hard.
Okay, maybe as a send-off, could you teach me how to say the name?
Andre
Svechnikov. Shnevektanov.
He literally has a problem whenever there's an S and then another consonant. That's not T.
Shnevektanov.
No, Svechnikov.
Okay.
Yep.
Svechnikov. Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks so much, Derek.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. This has been another episode of the Winter is Coming Fantasy Hockey Podcast. And just remember, everybody, a shopping cart could score 20 goals on Sidney Crosby's line. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.